The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Morning. Welcome to Age-Wise Living with Barbara Friesner. Barbara is here to keep you educated on elder care issues. She will give you the information you need to help your aging loved one and yourself. Now here is your host, Barbara Friesner.
Good morning and welcome to Age-Wise Living. And thanks so much for joining us today. I am delighted to be here and to have all of you here too. I'm your host, Barbara Friesner, and my company is Age-Wise Living. That's the name for the radio program. Very clever, don't you think? What a creative mind I have. Anyway, I got into the elder care biz the way a lot of people do, because of my own personal experience. And I was a care manager for more than 25 years, first for my grandmother for many years, and for the past 17 years for my mother, who had severe advanced dementia. And as a result of my experience, I became a generational coach because I really, really wanted to help people, other families, so that they didn't have to go through what I went through, so that they could have an easier time as they journeyed through elder care. And as a generational coach, I work with family members, and only the family members, never the seniors, only the family members, and I help the family members figure out what to do to help their aging loved one. And more importantly, I think anyway, I help them communicate with their aging loved one, communicate successfully, so their parents, aunts, uncles, whoever, actually do what needs to be done, which is really the hard part in all of this. A lot of times we know what needs to be done, we just can't convince them that this is in their best interest. At any rate, all the generational coaching I do is by phone, so I work with people all over the country, all over the world actually, and I also work with siblings, which is one of my favorite things to do, is to get all the siblings together on a conference call. You know, they're spread out all over the country, and get them together on a conference call so everyone is really working on a common goal and supporting the primary caregiver. I'm also an adjunct professor at Cornell University, where I teach senior housing management for the hotel school. I am the creator of the Ultimate Caregiver Success System, which provides everything you could possibly want, everything that I've learned over the past 25 years in one really great package. I'm very proud of it. You can see what all is in it. You can get lots of information about it by going to the shop page of my website at agewiseliving.com and clicking on the Ultimate Caregiver Success System and see why I am so excited about it. I also write a weekly newsletter with lots of great articles about issues affecting seniors and their families. And I write a monthly column for the National Association of Baby Boomer Women. And I'm a speaker and seminar leader, so if you're looking for a great speaker for your company or organization, I hope you will call me. And I have this show, Age-Wise Living, because it is my mission to help families help their aging loved ones resolve their elder care issues by choice, not crisis, which is why I am so delighted to have all of you here so that you can learn, and especially about one of the things that we're going to be talking about today, which I think is just such an interesting topic. Most people want to live in their own home for the rest of their lives. And for many of them, it's a problem because they don't have enough money to pay their bills, but they have too much to qualify for Medicaid, and they're really stuck in the middle. And, or as we like to say in Massachusetts, they're scrod. And it can be very confusing. However, a proper pooled income trust pays your bills, you know, your rent, your utilities, telephone, medical costs, whatever, and qualifies you for Medicaid-funded home care. So I think, I mean, this is the, I think this is a great solution in a lot of cases, not every case, but that's what we're going to be talking about today, so you get a sense of what it is and can find out if it's right in your situation. It's a great resource. It's worth understanding. And to help us do just that, we have an expert who will tell us how our aging loved ones can stay at home and keep their income while under Medicaid. Before we start, though, I want to tell you about a really great free teleseminar that I'm going to be doing on July 15th. I mentioned it the last time. It's set up for July 15th. It's called The 13 Steps to Successfully Resolving Your Elder Care Issues and Finally Getting a Good Night's Sleep. And it's on Wednesday, July 15th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And I did this program a couple of weeks ago, and it was such a success that I'm going to open it up to the world. And so please, please sign up for it. It is something, I want you to have this information. It's a free teleseminar on July 15th. However, you will need to register. It's free, but you need to register. So to register for the free teleseminar, it's called The 13 Steps to Successfully Resolving Your Elder Care Issues and Finally Getting a Good Night's Sleep. All you have to do is go to agewiseliving.com/tele, T-E-L-E, dash, sign up. Again, that's agewiseliving.com/tele, T-E-L-E, dash, sign up. And I will be giving that again because I really would love to have you on. It's first come, first serve. So, and I actually have had some people sign up already, and the number of spaces is limited. So I really encourage you to sign up as soon as possible. Again, that's agewiseliving.com/tele, T-E-L-E, dash, sign up, S-I-G-N-U-P. So, with that, let's welcome Jeffrey Asher. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, Barbara.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm very excited to be here.
And I'm delighted to have you. Jeffrey Asher is the owner and manager of the law offices of Jeffrey A. Asher, and he services the five boroughs of New York as well as the surrounding counties. And Jeffrey's law firm concentrates primarily in the areas of estate planning, asset protection, estates and trust administration, elder law, and Medicaid planning. So he's amazingly well qualified for what we're going to be doing today. Jeffrey is this part I just love. Jeffrey is a frequent lecturer for various financial institutions and civic groups and community organizations, and has presented often to the New York State Bar Association as a community educator on various estate planning topics. That's interesting. This is the part that's cool. Jeffrey is also a legal commentator on trusts and estates and elder law matters for Court TV, CNN Headline News, and the CBS Early Show. I think that is so cool. So, well done you. Jeffrey is admitted to practice in New York and Connecticut, and he is a peer-elected member of the Estate Planning Council of New York City and a member of the Trust and Estate Section and Elder Law Section of the New York State Bar Association and the Connecticut Bar Association. He is a graduate of Clark University in Worcester, Mass., and earned his law degree from Law School in Huntington, New York. So, again, welcome, Jeffrey.
Thank you so much, Barbara.
So let's get started with a basic question. What exactly is a pooled income trust?
Well, I don't think that I really could have summarized it better than you already did. It is a trust that is designed to help a Medicaid applicant stay in their home when they have too much income to qualify for Medicaid, or too many assets even to qualify for Medicaid.
Okay. So when you talk about Medicaid and Medicare, what is the, give us a sort of a brief overview and how it applies there.
Sure, okay. There is a very big distinction between Medicaid and Medicare. Medicare is a government program that each of us is entitled to once we turn age 65. 65 or in certain cases of disability. It is not a qualification program other than those criteria. But once you become 65 or once you prove a disability, then you are entitled to Medicare, and Medicare provides certain hospitalization benefits, certain doctor benefits, health insurance, prescription drugs, et cetera.
Okay.
Medicaid, on the other hand, is a need-based program. It is not something that a person is entitled to merely because they have attained a certain age or because they have suffered a specific disability. In order to qualify for Medicaid, a person needs to show that they are in need, meaning that they don't have any other resources, any other income, any other assets with which to provide for their own health care. In our current system, Medicaid is designed to help people who are really very, very low on the income level and on the asset level.
Okay.
Medicaid changes from state to state, meaning that each state has its own rules regarding what those income or asset levels are. So a person would have to check with their state rules regarding how much income or assets they are allowed to keep before Medicaid disqualifies them.
Okay, and when you're talking about income and assets, income is like pension and Social Security?
Income is basically everything that you get, other than some sort of a disability payment, whether it's Social Security disability, whether it's a state-funded disability program. But income is Social Security, it's pension, it's any other type of retirement.
Dividends.
It's dividends, it's interest, it's bonds on, it's coupons on bonds.
Okay.
It is any type of interest, any type of income that a person receives on a monthly basis.
Okay, and then assets is like a house.
Exactly right. Assets are anything else that you own that is an asset. Your house, your savings account, your checking account, your stock account, your dividends account. Under some circumstances, even your retirement account can be counted as an asset. And it is that problem, which is that everything that we own, for the most part, is counted as either an income or an asset, that really makes trouble for people. Because how do you get these programs for your home and your home care if you can't qualify for them because of your excess income or assets?
Okay. So then let's go back to the question about what is a pooled income trust.
Okay. So let's take New York, for example. In New York, a person can keep up to $13,800 and still qualify for Medicaid.
And that's total or that's every month?
That's total. That's an asset level. Meaning
okay.
that a person can have assets of less than $13,800 and qualify for Medicaid. Anything above $13,800, the person will disqualify for Medicaid until they can prove that they have spent down their assets below that $13,800 number. On an income side, a person can keep $767, and then you add to that $20 if you are of a certain age or if you're blind or disabled. So let's take the number $787. That is the monthly income resource limit, meaning that if a person has income over $787, they will not qualify for certain Medicaid-funded programs, such as home care.
Okay. So we're going to need to take a quick break because I really want to hear all about this and make sure that I don't rush you on it. So we're going to take a short break and come back because this is an important topic. Our guest is Jeffrey Asher, and he will be answering more questions about pooled income trusts. And this is Barbara Friesner. You're listening to Age Wise Living, and we will be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you struggling with caregiving responsibilities for your parents, in-laws, or other aging loved ones? Are you in an elder care power struggle with your siblings? Are you struggling to balance work and elder care and feeling you're losing control of both? Are elder care issues such as driving, finances, or maintaining their home costing you time, money, relationships, and peace of mind? Wanting to help an aging loved one is one of the most loving and compassionate things you can do. However, your help may not always be appreciated or well received, leaving you tired, frustrated, and overwhelmed. If this sounds like what you're going through, you're not alone. I'm Barbara Friesner, and I'm a generational coach, and I'm here to help you. To get started, just call me toll-free for a complimentary Get Acquainted conversation at 877-AGE-WISE. That's 877-AGE-WISE. Or go to my website, agewiseliving.com. That's agewiseliving.com to resolve your elder care issues by choice, not crisis. Call 877-AGE-WISE.
Go behind the scenes of what you see, hear, and read on the news. Learn the ins and outs of public relations on Stars of PR with Cindy R. every Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time. Cindy Rakowitz is a Clio Award winner and founder of Rock and Roll Public Relations, who wants to share her PR experiences and knowledge with you. Learn how to handle a crisis, deal with celebrities, and become a terrific PR executive. Listen to the Stars of PR with Cindy R. every Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time here on News Talk Radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Amanda, age 3. Tyler, age 8. Marissa, age 4.5.
We could tell you just how many child abductions last year led to Amber Alerts, but this isn't about cold statistics. It's about saving kids.
Shaniqua, age 14.
To get free Amber Alerts on your cell phone, go to wirelessamberalerts.org. When an alert is issued in your area, you'll receive it as a free text message. Wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to AgeWise Living with Barbara Friesner. If you have a question for Barbara, a comment or problem you wish to discuss on today's program, call in now at 1-866-472-5788. That's toll-free, 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to barbara@agewiseliving.com. Now back to our program.
Hi, welcome back to AgeWise Living. I'm Barbara Friesner, and today we're talking with Jeffrey Asher, and he's answering questions about pooled income trusts. And when we went to break, Jeffrey, you were talking about how much money you, what the most amount you could have for, on income each month and most amount you had in assets. And that's fine. Now, you said that they are allowed to have $787 in income each month and $13,800 in assets. And that's fine. But what happens if it's over that? And is it both of those? Does it have to be both of those? Or can one be over and still qualify?
Very good question. And that will lead perfectly into an explanation of the pooled income trust.
Okay. Good.
If a person, and again, keep in mind, we're also only talking about individual people, one person at a time. And what I mean by that is that if you have a couple, then the couple has their own income and asset resource limits. But right now, to make it simple, we are only talking about individual people.
Okay.
So if a person has more than $13,800 in assets, Medicaid will deny their benefits, period. The person will have to prove to Medicaid that they have spent, not given away, but spent their assets down below $13,800 in order to qualify for benefits. That's very difficult when you take into account the type of asset that people typically have. You're talking about life savings. You're talking about a home, retirement account sometimes. And it may be very difficult to spend the money in order to reduce those assets down to $13,800. But in that case, Medicaid will absolutely deny, but that's not the case when it comes to income. Now, there are things that we can do to help a person reduce their assets, or at least reduce their assets as they put on the application to Medicaid. So that isn't even our focus right now, because we can solve that asset problem. The larger issue is, what do we do about the income? Because, Barbara, let's face it, $787 a month is not a lot of money.
No.
And many people have to live on more than that. But Medicaid says, too bad. If you have more than $787, then you will be disqualified for benefits unless you pay to Medicaid the difference between what you do have and that $787.
Which puts you in a really bad situation, because you still needed the more money.
Absolutely right. Imagine a person earns $1,000 a month. It doesn't matter from where, but imagine they earn $1,000 a month. But they need all that $1,000 to pay their expenses. If Medicaid forces them to pay the difference between the $1,000 and the $787, what do they go without? What do they stop paying for? Is it their rent? Is it their groceries? What do they stop paying for? They can't live on just that $787. And that's where the pooled income trust comes in. The pooled income trust is a trust that has been granted benefit from the Medicaid program to assist people who have excess income. And the way it works is that the person who is applying for Medicaid takes whatever excess there is over their $787, meaning, for a person who had $1,000, and the difference between $1,000 and $787 is $213.
Mm-hmm.
So a person will now take that $213, and they will transfer those monies into what's called a pooled income trust. And that $213 is now used within the trust to pay their bills, to pay their expenses, together with whatever other monies they have.
So in Whatever other monies who has, the pooled income trust?
No, meaning whatever other monies that individual has out of the $787.
Okay.
So in effect, a person is taking their full $1,000 and they are dividing it into the $787 that they are allowed to keep and the excess, the $213 that Medicaid says they have too much. But by putting that $213 into the pooled income trust, Medicaid says, okay, fine. You have now satisfied the obligation. You can use your full $1,000 as you have before, but the $213 sitting in the pooled income trust will have to be administered by the trust itself. Now, that's very important. That's very important to understanding why a pooled income trust works. The reason why is because a pooled income trust is a very specific type of trust. It's not a trust that a person can go to their lawyer to get created. It's not a trust that a person can go to their senior center to get help with. It is a trust that can only be administered by a charity, and only some charities actually offer pooled income trusts.
Huh.
But the rules behind a pooled income trust are these. When a person deposits their excess income over $787, when a person deposits that excess income into the pooled income trust, the charity uses that money, they invest it, they manage it, they make sure that it pays the fees, they make sure that it pays expenses, that it makes sure that it makes money within the trust. And the charity uses that money to pay the bills that the applicant sends to the pooled income trust to be paid.
And can they send bills that are more than 280, whatever we said, per month?
They cannot, because they need to only be able to pay the bills that they were currently paying, meaning that this doesn't give a person the opportunity to now increase their expenses. It only gives them the opportunity to use the money that they have and still qualify for Medicaid. So the pooled income trust presumes that the person will be able to pay their expenses using the $1,000 that they have been receiving in income.
Okay.
So now what happens, however, with a person who, let's say, is not using the $1,000 a month in their income? Not everyone gets income of $1,000 and pays out expenses of $1,000. What happens to the person who is paying out expenses of, let's say, $950 and counts on putting the extra little bit away into an account.
Okay.
Unfortunately, in this situation, because we are asking Medicaid for a home care assistance, in this situation, the pooled income trust keeps that difference. So if the person doesn't use all $213, then any monies left over will be kept by that pooled income trust. But Medicaid doesn't care in what order you spend your money. They don't care if you spend your own income, your own $787 first, and then spend the money in the pooled income trust. All Medicaid, all that matters to Medicaid is that a person is not left with more than $787 a month coming into their account as income.
Does the pooled income trust care whether you pay, use the trust money first and then the money out of your own pocket?
No. The pooled income trust's job is to pay the bills that you send it. So they don't inquire to see if you spent your own income first. They will only pay the bills that you send it. So as long as you maximize the dollars that you have in the pooled income trust, as long as you send the pooled income trust the bills to be paid, to utilize all of the, all of your share of that trust, then you can keep whatever portion is left out of the $787.
Huh.
The good part about it also is that the pooled income trust many times doesn't even care if the bills are your own. And what I mean by that is, if there are bills that you have to pay because someone else is helping you. So, for example, if a person has a relative who is grocery shopping, or a person has a relative who is picking up sundry items in the store for their day-to-day need, that person could even submit their own credit card bills, seeking reimbursement from the pooled income trust. And as long as the pooled income trust gets the permission from the applicant to pay those bills, then even our helpers, our caregivers, people who are helping us day-to-day can even get reimbursed for their expenses paid.
Wow. It sounds terrific. It sounds wonderful. Now, you mentioned earlier, you mentioned assets, and we have just a couple of minutes left, but that's for the income. And for the assets, is there a different pooled trust for the assets? Is it pooled asset trust?
Well, yes. The pooled income trust obviously is specifically for income, but there is a pooled asset trust for your asset levels. And basically, the pooled asset trust works the exact same way, except that it doesn't pay any bills. So, in effect, a person who has more than $13,800 can take that excess, transfer that excess to a pooled asset trust, and thereby qualify for Medicaid. Remember what I said before, that if a person has more than $13,800, then they will absolutely be disqualified for Medicaid unless they can prove that they were able to spend their assets down below $13,800. Now,
before we go on, we're going to have to stop here for a short break. Hate to do it. I'm just so involved with what you're talking about. We're going to have to stop. This is Barbara Friesner, and you are listening to AgeWise Living, and our really interesting guest today is Jeffrey Asher. And when we come back, he's going to be answering more questions about pooled income trusts. And for more information about Jeffrey, if you'd like more information, please go to his website, which is Asher Law Firm, A-S-H-E-R, lawfirm.com. That's asherlawfirm.com. Also remind you to sign up for my free teleseminar, The 13 Steps to Successfully Resolving Your Elder Care Issues and Finally Getting a Good Night's Sleep, which is on Wednesday, July 15th. Please go to agewiseliving.com/tele-signup. And with that, we will be right back.
The
Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you struggling with caregiving responsibilities for your parents, in-laws, or other aging loved ones? Are you in an elder care power struggle with your siblings? Are you struggling to balance work and elder care and feeling you're losing control of both? Are elder care issues such as driving, finances, or maintaining their home costing you time, money, relationships, and peace of mind? Wanting to help an aging loved one is one of the most loving and compassionate things you can do. However, your help may not always be appreciated or well received, leaving you tired, frustrated, and overwhelmed. If this sounds like what you're going through, you're not alone. I'm Barbara Friesner, and I'm a generational coach, and I'm here to help you. To get started, just call me toll-free for a complimentary Get Acquainted conversation at 877-AGE-WISE. That's 877-AGE-WISE. Or go to my website, agewiseliving.com. That's agewiseliving.com, to resolve your elder care issues by choice, not crisis. Call 877-AGE-WISE.
If you want to put the pep back in your step, Chad Lafferty has just what you're looking for. Dance is life. Life is dance.
It's only about dance.
It's about moving through life with style, gaining awareness of the never-ending, ever-flowing movement that accompanies all of life's activities. Dance is life. Life is dance. Broadcast every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Radio Network. Be sure to tune in and tap into the limitless healing that dance can provide.
Can't stop now.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America. Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to AgeWise Living with Barbara Friesner. Do you have a question for Barbara, a comment or problem you wish to discuss on today's program? Call in now at 1-866-472-5788. That's toll-free, 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to Barbara at agewiseliving.com. Now back to our program.
Hi, and welcome back. This is Barbara Friesner, and this is AgeWise Living. And today we're talking with Jeffrey Asher, and he's answering questions about pooled income trusts. And it's just so fascinating because there are techniques out there to help people, but people just don't know about them. And I think this is one of those that is such an amazing thing to know about, because it really, for many people, may be the answer to their to their problem. Now, before we left, we were talking about pooled asset trusts. So, and I had to cut you off. So,
I was just going to finish up and say that there are such things as pooled asset trusts, but that they and they're used specifically when a person has more than the Medicaid asset resource limit of $13,800. Medicaid will disqualify a person for benefits if they have more than that $13,800. But that a pooled asset trust can be a last resort in order to qualify the person for benefits by transferring to the trust the excess over $13,800 and administering it within the pooled asset trust the same way as it's administered within the pooled income trust. However, since there are many other things that we can do, techniques and methods of reducing assets, for purposes of what is or is not included as a resource for Medicaid, the pooled asset trust really is a last resort.
But I would imagine it would be the sort of thing that if you didn't have any family at all, and so you just wanted to have everything taken care of, but you're not trying to save the house or whatever, that it's a really good option.
Absolutely. And in those instances where either the person can't spend their money on anything because they have nothing to spend it on, because all their care is taken care is being cared for, or in an instance where they have no family member, or there is no ability to create a qualified proper transfer for Medicaid purposes, then a pooled asset trust really will work for that person.
Okay. Great. All right. But ideally, they work with their lawyer. They hopefully have some family or people that they do want to give the money to. So we'll go back and focus more on the income. Just out of curiosity, what does Medicaid think about pooled income trusts? Do they like them? They okay with them? I mean, they're not getting money.
That is correct. That is correct. And one would assume that Medicaid would have a problem with the trusts. And in a small way, they do. And that's the reason why they are so strict when it comes to the rules regarding pooled income trusts. Like I said, you can't just walk into a lawyer's office or walk into your local convenience store and pick up forms to create a pooled income trust. They need to be created by a proper organization. And they need to be sponsored by a charity. And they need to be administered according to the rules. But as long as all that happens, then Medicaid really can't say anything about the pooled income trust. It is a proper method and technique by which we can reduce the excess income to a level that Medicaid will accept.
Okay, and so where do you find a pooled income trust?
Each state will have its own resources regarding who can sponsor and administer a pooled income trust. But many charities, in fact, all charities have to sponsor the pooled income trust, but many charities will have an available resource for where to find it. In our local area, the two greatest resources for where to find pooled income and pooled asset trust would be either UJA or an organization called NYSARC, NYSARC.org. Both of these organizations offer pooled income and pooled asset trusts. They are very easily created by the people in charge of the programs.
When you say they're easily created, so I call them up, we easily create one for me.
Well, basically...
Or I just put my money into the pool.
Yeah, exactly right. That's the reason why it's called a pooled income or a pooled asset trust. It's one fund. And all a person is doing when they create this trust is they complete the application and the paperwork to sign on to being part of that pool, and they contribute their assets or their income into that pool, and they become a beneficiary. And each of these organizations and any other organization that offers this type of a trust will have the forms readily available, many times to be completed over the phone. And in most instances, an applicant doesn't even need an attorney to assist them. The organizations themselves are more than qualified to help a person qualify for the pooled income or the pooled asset trust.
Okay, I want to go back for a second. So they can, each state has their own pooled income trust, or each state has a place you can go to find a pooled income trust?
Basically, each state has a type of charity, or at least has a number of charities, and it's not state-specific and it's not state-dependent. It's just that some charities that operate out of New York may not operate out of Wyoming, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So each state may have their own charities that are offering the pooled income trust or the pooled asset trust to its residents.
There's maybe some states that... So every state... If there's a charity in Florida that does it in all 50 states, then every state will have that one listed. But then
they'll also
only have the ones listed that are available for their state residents, right?
That is absolutely correct.
Okay.
Some charities may be nationwide, and some charities that offer the pool trust may only be local area specific.
So you don't have to go to 50 different databases. You go to your own state one, you have everything you need.
That is correct. And the state Medicaid offices will also be able to assist an applicant in locating a charity that offers a pooled income or a pooled asset trust.
Okay. And you don't need a lawyer. You can call up and you say, I want to join a pooled income trust.
Correct.
And that's it.
They will take your information over the telephone. They will fill out an application or at least send you the application to be filled out. The charity will be available to you to assist you in filling it out. But the charity wants to know, number one, how much income you have, if it's a pooled income trust, or assets, if it's a pooled asset trust. They will want to know what type of bills you have, and they will set the applicant up on a process by which the applicant will send each month the bills to the pooled income trust as well as a check for the excess income. One thing a person has to understand, however, that a pooled income trust is not a bill-paying service, meaning you cannot change the address on your credit card bills or on your rent statement or on your telephone bill to be sent directly to the pooled income trust. That is not their business. Their business is to pay the bills with the income that the applicant sends to them. So it is dependent upon the applicant on a monthly basis to send in the bills and the excess income to the pooled income trust.
And they need to match it up. The applicant needs to match it up. They can't send them all their bills and their money and then let the pooled income trust say, okay, here are the ones we did pay, here are the ones we didn't have enough money for, we're sending these back to you. The applicant actually has to be kind of managing it, where it might fall into a family member to do that or a financial person to help them with that.
Yes and no. It depends on how much control a person wants to have over their own finances. For example, if a person likes the idea of paying their own bills or if their family is involved to pay those bills, that's fine. But if the applicant does not have that kind of support or cannot do it themselves, then there is nothing wrong with the applicant sending to the pooled income trust the entire bill or all of the bills to pay along with more than the excess of income.
Oh, so they can send $1,000 that we talked about earlier, $1,000 worth of income, $1,000 worth of bills. They don't just have to deal with the $200 and whatever.
$13. The pooled income trust will pay all the bills as long as they have the income to do it with.
Wow. Now, I want to talk about the bills in a minute, but are there fees to setting up a pooled income, to setting it up? Are there fees that you have to pay every month? How does that work?
Yes, there are fees to set up the pooled income trust or fees to join the already existing pooled income trust, and there are monthly fees. And they're relatively minor, but they do need to be taken into account in the budget when a person checks to see if they can qualify for the pooled income trust. For example, if the person is receiving $1,000 worth of income, and they are paying out $1,000 worth of expenses, and the registration for the pooled income trust is going to cost them $30 a month, then that applicant will have to figure out what they can do in order to pay for the registration for that trust.
Mm.
So it does, it's not a free service. It does require some payment of fees, and those fees depend on the charity. And a simple phone call to the charity, working out the budget issues may be all it takes to solve that problem.
Okay. What we're going to do is we're going to take another short break. Sorry to do this because I'm finding that this is just absolutely fascinating. But we're going to stop here for a short break. This is Barbara Friesner, and you're listening to Age Wise Living. Our guest today is Jeffrey Asher, and when we come back, he's going to be answering more questions about pooled income trusts. And for more information about Jeffrey, you can call him toll-free at 888-720-2122. That's 888-720-2122. Or you can go to his website, which is asherlawfirm.com. And I also want to remind you to sign up for my free teleseminar, The 13 Steps to Successfully Resolving Your Elder Care Issues and Finally Getting a Good Night's Sleep. It's on Wednesday, July 15th, and it's at 8 p.m. Eastern. To do that, please go to agewiseliving.com/tele-signup. That's agewiseliving.com/tele-signup. And with that, we will be right back.
me.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Why is Pepsi cooler than Coke? Why are iPods so popular? In 2005, how can you launch a successful brand? Want to know? Learn about the fascinating and intriguing world of graphic design and branding on Design Matters with Debbie Millman. Every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time, Debbie Millman will provide you with a provocative look into the stimulating world of design as it intersects with contemporary culture. Hear what the experts have to say about creating, maintaining, and launching a brand in today's challenging marketplace. Join us every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time for Design Matters with Debbie Millman, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Are you struggling with caregiving responsibilities for your parents, in-laws, or other aging loved ones? Are you in an elder care power struggle with your siblings? Are you struggling to balance work and elder care and feeling you're losing control of both? Are elder care issues such as driving, finances, or maintaining their home costing you time, money, relationships, and peace of mind? Wanting to help an aging loved one is one of the most loving and compassionate things you can do. However, your help may not always be appreciated or well received, leaving you tired, frustrated, and overwhelmed. If this sounds like what you're going through, you're not alone. I'm Barbara Friesner, and I'm a generational coach, and I'm here to help you. To get started, just call me toll-free for a complimentary Get Acquainted conversation at 877-AGE-WISE. That's 877-AGE-WISE. Or go to my website, agewiseliving.com. That's agewiseliving.com to resolve your elder care issues by choice, not crisis. Call 877-AGE-WISE.
How many of us haven't felt ripped off at one time or another? Don't you wish you had someplace to tune in for the answers? Join Jennifer Litwin every week on The Shop Cop. She'll take the time to explain real value and keep you away from the fraud that's out there in the shopping world. Jennifer has become the shopper's advocate, which means she can get you on the right track. Her guests are a who's who in the retail world. Don't get caught making a mistake in this down economy. Jennifer Litwin is here to help. The Shop Cop, live Thursdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to AgeWise Living with Barbara Friesner. Do you have a question for Barbara, a comment or problem you wish to discuss on today's program? Call in now at 1-866-472-5788. That's toll-free, 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to Barbara at agewiseliving.com. Now back to our program.
Hi, welcome back to AgeWise Living. I am Barbara Friesner, and today we are talking with Jeffrey Asher, and he's answering questions about pooled income trusts. And it's absolutely fascinating. Jeffrey, I have a question for you, and it sounds like a really terrific resource, and I know that it is a terrific resource. It almost sounds too good to be true. So are there circumstances under which it's not a good solution? Because it's like this is almost a no-brainer. Why wouldn't somebody do this? So what's the downside? Is there a downside?
There really is not a downside. I mean,
wow.
You're, the premise is true, where why shouldn't someone do this? And many times the reason why a person doesn't do it is because they don't know that they can do it. But there really isn't a downside, except in the event that they do not have the ability to manage their own finances, and they don't have the support network to do it. Because, remember, in order for this to work, the applicant needs to be organized enough to send in their bills as well as their income check to the pooled income trust. And if they don't do that, the pooled income trust will not pay the bills, but they will still charge the fees. And just like a credit card, there might be fees on top of fees on top of fees, and now the person is left without their bills being paid, with bills being incurred at the pooled income trust, and then Medicaid steps in and says, wait a second, what happened here? You are no longer qualified for Medicaid. So it's an easy opportunity to misstep in the application of the trust and get yourself in trouble. So It is not an easy fix, and it is not a quick fix. It is a fix, but it needs to be monitored just like everything else.
So if you have somebody who maybe has dementia or something like that, or somebody who, you know, misunderstands, which is entirely possible, where they just somehow think, oh, well, the pool, now, you know, I've been doing it for a couple of months, so now the pooled income trust is just going to start doing it automatically, that's when they might get into trouble. So they really do have to have somebody who's paying attention and making sure that it's happening.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. Anything else? Because that is actually relatively easy to resolve.
That is. And other than that, there really is very little downside to the pooled income trust or even to the pooled asset trust. The only other thing I want to caution the person is when the applicant dies, when the applicant passes away, the family has to understand that the charity is involved here because they anticipate that upon the death of the applicant, any monies left in the trust will go to the charity and be used within the trust. So there is no benefit. There is no survivor benefit for either the income or the assets that are left in the trust when the applicant passes away.
All right, but that's really fair enough. I mean, you know, if you have a house, then clearly you want to do something other than the asset trust because maybe the house is worth more than $13,800, ideally. But
that's correct.
You know, I mean, so okay, so you can take a look at that. But if somebody is, you know, if you have $1,000 and you have $950 worth of bills every month, and they're paying it, and it works out. From a family standpoint, I would think they'd be pretty happy to have that happen. But you never know.
Absolutely right. And in those situations where the support is there, it is a wonderful resource and a wonderful way to make sure that our ailing family member is getting the support that they need.
Yeah, and it is true. I'm saying, you know, that would be that family should be fine with it, and we all know I'm not actually as naive as that sounded, because there are a lot of families who would fight over that. So it really is something that is important for the family members, everybody, to be talking to each other and making sure that that is clearly understood. Now, in really not a whole lot of time left, what are some of the bills that can be paid with a pooled income trust? Is there anything, you know, that can't, or?
The only thing that cannot be paid by the pooled income trust are bills for improper or immoral expenses. And my understanding is on a charity-by-charity basis, charities won't pay for cigarettes.
Oh.
That's the only thing that I recall being on a charity-by-charity basis. They will not pay for cigarettes, and they will not pay for cartons of cigarettes purchased at a store. Everything else that they will pay for, within reason, as long as they are not immoral.
Will they pay for alcohol?
Maybe alcohol is also restricted as well. But for the most part, every expense that a person incurs for their day-to-day care, as well as I said, the expenses incurred by their family members for their care, will be paid by the pooled income trust.
So I'm guessing that if somebody submits a bill, if I purchase cigarettes for my mother and then I just submit my credit card bill, then
there are obviously ways to not make it obvious that the expenses are for certain things, and you're right. It will be up to the pooled income trust to determine if they want to look more into the expenses.
Okay, now I have a couple of questions here. Mike Gamble has sent emailed some questions, and it says, what happens if a pooled income trust doesn't pay a bill you send them?
Well, they are a fiduciary, so therefore they are subject to the standards of fiduciary responsibility. And if the bills are not paid because the pooled income trust has not done its job, then you certainly have, then the applicant has recourse against the pooled income trust and the charity involved.
Okay, so there really it's not, I mean, you sent them the bill, you I'm assuming from this question that you sent the bill and you sent the money. And if something happens, it falls through the cracks and it doesn't get to them, then the recourse is to go back to the pooled income trust.
That's correct. And any fees that are incurred because the bill was paid, was not paid or paid late would be the responsibility of the charity. And all that is spelled out in the agreement that is signed by both the charity and the applicant, where the charity's fiduciary responsibility is actually expressed in the language of the agreement.
Okay. And by the way, thank you, Mike, for sending in these questions. He also had another one. How can assets be transferred into a pooled income trust or pooled asset trust if the assets must be spent and not given away? So I'm assuming that this is not considered giving money away because it's actually going to be used for something. Is that correct?
Correct. While it's not necessarily spending the asset, it is transferring it to a qualified beneficiary, a transfer which is not considered a penalty transfer for Medicaid purposes.
Okay. And where can one find a list of charities that set up and administer these trusts? And you had mentioned that before. If you can just tell us that again, that would be great.
The best way to find a list of charities that offer the pooled income trust would be to contact the state Medicaid office and ask that question.
Your own state Medicaid office.
Correct. If a person has a computer or has a family member who is able to access a computer, doing a search in your state for a pooled income trust will result in a number of opportunities. And also contacting a charity that you know already offers one but may or may not offer it in your state, they will still be able to assist you in finding one for your state.
And unfortunately, we were out of time. I can't believe it. I'm so sorry that it's all the time we have today. But would you be willing to answer these questions, these last few questions, and the rest that we had in my newsletter?
It would be my pleasure.
Okay, so anybody who's interested in the answers to these and the other questions, please, please go to my website, agewiseliving.com. Sign up for my free newsletter. It comes out every week. So please do sign up for that. Time went so fast. I'd really like to thank again Jeffrey Asher. You were absolutely terrific. And if you have any questions for Jeffrey that you didn't get a chance to ask, please email them to me at barbara@agewiseliving.com, and he will answer those in the next AgeWise Living newsletter. That's barbara@agewiseliving.com. I really hope that you will tune in next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Our special guest is going to be Anthony Campagna, and he's going to be talking about pre-planning a funeral, making a decision before there's a need. It's not making difficult decisions, as you know, I know, making difficult decisions at one of the most difficult times of your life is a horrible thing to do. So he's going to go into all kinds of stuff, talking about flowers, talking about what to do and when to do it and how to do it. It's going to be fascinating. So, again, thank you, Jeffrey, so much for being here. I had a great time, and I want to thank you all so much for listening. Until next Tuesday, this is your most appreciative host, Barbara Friesner, saying to please have a terrific week and a wonderful 4th of July, and carpe diem, seize the day.
We appreciate your joining us for AgeWise Living with host Barbara Friesner. Please tune in again next Tuesday morning at 7 Pacific, 10 Eastern, here on the Voice America Variety Channel.